Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 124. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Hey, Chris.
We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We've got some new game impressions to discuss, we have some news to talk about, and we have this week's big topic, which is going to be our favorite gaming nemesis, or perhaps favorite gaming rivals, if you will. Before we get to that, though, let's start by talking about some of the latest releases on the Nintendo Switch, starting with Celeste.
Ooh.
This is a pixel art platformer about climbing a mountain. It's full of spikes and collapsing platforms and air dashing and wall climbing and wall jumping, and it's from the makers of Towerfall, and that's pretty much all I know about. I have not played this game yet, but Pete, I understand that you have. I would love to hear all about your experience.
Yeah, Chris, it's basically a sequel to Ice Climber.
That is not true. That much I know. A filthy liar, Pete.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is a episode about Nemesis, so, nemesis. So I feel like I had to do that. Anyway, so Celeste, yeah, it's a great game. I just picked it up last weekend, saw the buzz about it. I think a few places have given it a perfect score.
And it was featured on that Nintendo Direct a couple weeks ago as well.
Yeah, that's right. And so far, I'm totally loving it. The art style is great, the pixel art, but it's really detailed pixel art. Everything kind of moves and has like a life to it. But what really shines in this game is the gameplay. I think like if I had to compare it to something, I'd almost say something like a Super Meat Boy.
That makes sense.
But in the best possible way, where the controls are very precise. It's kind of forgiving in the sense that you don't have to go through like an entire stage usually. I'm only about 2 hours in, so I can't say that for certain. There are a couple areas I've been to where you have to kind of beat like an entire section.
Mm-hmm.
But, you get to immediately start over when you die. In fact, there's even like a pro tip in the game that says, don't be concerned with how much you die. You should actually wear it like a badge because it means you've explored a lot. Because at the end of the level, it tells you how many times you died, and the number's pretty high. I think my first level was like 70.
Oh, wow.
And then the level after that was like 115. But the thing is that it's an instantaneous respawn. There's almost no penalty in most cases. In like 80% of the situations, you just restart on the same screen where you entered. There's these little strawberries you go for. I know you love strawberries.
You know I do.
And you can actually pick them up, and as long as you hold them long enough to eat them, you then get to not have to worry about getting it again. So some of the levels, there's a strawberry that's really hard to get. Well, once you get it and obtain it and land on the ground, you'll eat the strawberry, and then it gets counted. So even if you die at that point, the strawberry is yours.
Now you don't have to collect it all over again.
Correct.
That's nice.
Yeah, and then beyond that, the sound in this game is just amazing. The music is it's excellently scored. It reminds me a lot of Stranger Things soundtrack. It's very synth-inspired, kind of the 80s. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but that's kind of the vibe I get. The storyline is great. There's these moments in the game where you find these people to talk to, and the way it's told is really cool. It's kind of, very story-driven, and there's these high-quality portraits of the characters talking.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that in the trailer.
Yeah, and it just kind of becomes this really fun, you can blow right through most conversations in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gives you the option for a break at the end of each little conversation. So, if you're not into it, you can just go through. But I think it's really well written. There's a character that actually, tells you he has an Instagram account, but it's not Instagram. It's something goofy to play on that, but then if you go find it on Instagram, he actually is an account, and there's a bunch of pictures he's posted, and it's funny because it's all like in-game artwork and stuff. It's kind of this fun little meta fourth wall breaking sort of goofy mechanic. The other thing is so far the story seems to really be emotionally driven, which is kind of weird for a game like this.
That seems cool, though.
Yeah, it's great. It's you can tell that, the character's a little insecure. There's this moment where, not to give too many spoilers, but I think it's kind of in the trailer, you basically have like a dark version of yourself.
Oh, yeah, and it like chases after you.
Yeah, so there's these moments where it's just kind of freaky, like dream sequences.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I'm not sure where it's going to go, but so far, totally loving the story, totally loving the gameplay. The game just feels really fun to play. Like, you don't really have to collect anything, but it's such a compelling game mechanic. You kind of have this, it's almost like if you play Smash Brothers, it's like you get a jump and then you also get a dash. And that dash can go in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first game of this style that I will play with the thumbstick, because the thumbstick is actually easier to pull off the dash move.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas, like, if I'm playing...
How do you do it?
So basically you get a button that jumps once.
Right.
Every time you land on the platform. But then you also get this dash where you hit another button in any direction on the thumbstick. And you go flying in that direction. Now, of course, there's a couple little, you know, there's a power up you can get where you do dash and you can get a second dash in the air.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some cheats, not cheats, but it's like level design where if you fall through a screen, you can actually get another jump as well, another dash as well.
Huh, okay.
Anyway, I can't tell you enough that the gameplay mechanics just feel good. It kind of reminds me again of Smash Brothers. I think it's the guys that made, you know, Tower Fall Ascension.
Right.
And I think that it has a similar mechanic in that game. On a side note, I hear they're making Tower Fall Ascension for Switch after they release this game and get it out in all markets.
Yeah, that's been a rumor for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Now, do you have any offensive capabilities, or is it all just jumping and dashing?
So the funny thing is, it's all jumping and dashing, and there's really no enemies.
Except for the shadow that chases you, I guess.
Well, right. There's a couple things like that, but there's nothing you can defeat, if that makes sense. At least how much I've played.
No, it totally makes sense.
I'm assuming there are parts where something like that can happen, but I have not encountered that to this point.
Okay. And what about the assist options? You know, they sort of made a big deal about that in the Nintendo Direct, that there's ways to, you know, slow down the gameplay and even become invincible. Have you found the need for any of that yet? Have you used any of those options?
No, Chris, that's pretty much for sissies. No, I'm kidding. I actually just haven't touched it. Oh, I did find one cool thing. It's kind of a spoiler. I don't know if you guys want to know, but if you don't want to hear this, you know, mute it for a second. Basically, I found a video game machine in a part of the game where you can play like a really lo-fi version of the same game. It's basically Celeste 8-bit or something. And the controls are not as deep. There's like a limited range of motion. Instead of dashing any direction, you can only dash up, down, left, right. But I found myself all of a sudden trying to beat that. And it was totally worth playing through. I haven't finished it, but I got to like a part where I'm like, okay, this clearly goes on for a long time. And then the cool thing is once you find it, then you can access it from the main menu. So it's nice to be able to have that option. Game within a game.
Okay, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Okay, one last question for you. Mm-hmm. I have not picked this game up yet, so I want you to give me your sales pitch. Why should I pick up Celeste?
You should pick up Celeste because the price point is right. The game is stellar in almost every category you can imagine. I think that it's a worthwhile indie game that I know is on many platforms, but for Switch, it's great to have the option of on the television and handheld.
All right. Well, it does sound cool. I would love to check it out. Thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Yeah. It's one of the best platformers I've played in a while, so give it a shot.
All right. Very cool. In the meantime, I have been playing something else on the Switch. I picked up Arcade Archives Kid Nicky.
Oh, how's that?
Well, you know, this, of course, is the arcade version of a game that I know a lot of people played on the old NES. You know, it's Kid Nicky, Radical Ninja. You're running through the levels and fighting enemy ninjas with your spinning sword. And it's still a whole lot of fun. It plays great. The music is really great. And there are lots of graphical details in this arcade version that were not visible on the NES. Like, there are these bad guys that I'd always thought were like these weird pink bearded leprechauns. It turns out they're actually dudes in kabuki masks. Who knew?
Wait, so you thought it was me and then now it turns out to be a guy in a kabuki mask?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the game is still a lot of fun, but what I've discovered is this game is way harder than the NES version.
Yeah.
Like, there are no checkpoints. If you get to the boss at the end of a level and you die, it's back to the very beginning of the level. there were multiple checkpoints in the NES game. And of course, if you die to boss, you can just restart the boss and then you can, you know, sort of learn from your mistakes and then you can beat it pretty quickly. In this game, that's not the case at all. And the bosses have more complicated patterns and they are far less predictable. And on top of that, there is a much faster timer. So you're fighting the timer as well as all the enemies and obstacles. So it is significantly tougher.
Funny.
And my other little complaint about the game is that it is all in Japanese. So the title screen doesn't even say Kid Nikki Radical Ninja. And there are so many cool little things in the localized version of that game that I just taken for granted, like the hilarious little cutscene at the beginning where it says, Ninja School will help you, which is just awesome. And it's not in this version. It just says something in Japanese instead. And all the bosses have these really charming names like Death Breath and the Mad Monk and the Green Grub. And none of that is in there. In fact, according to the instructions for the game, the character is not even named Kid Nikki. So yeah, it takes a bit of getting used to if you are more familiar with the North American version of the game. But still, I'm very glad it's available. It's certainly better than no Kid Nikki at all. I don't really recommend it for newcomers to Kid Nikki, but if you are already a longtime fan, I think it's totally worth picking up.
Yeah, I can see that. About the level of difficulty in this game, I feel like we've talked about this before, but these arcade games, that's kind of the bummer about them, right? Like, every time I play a game that was made for the arcade, I realize that the game was absolutely made with stealing your quarters in mind.
Yeah, a lot of times that's true. But, you know, it's funny. There's a big difference between something like Kid Nikki and Super Mario Brothers, where it really requires you to have a lot of skill to get through. And then there's something like Double Dragon, which recently came out on Arcade Archives as well. Mm-hmm. And that game, you can just keep plunking quarters over and over and over again. So it really encourages you. Yeah, just continue. You can just keep picking up where you left off. Whereas in, say, Kid Nikki or Mario, you can get frustrated. It's like, oh, I'm getting sent back to the beginning every time. So annoying. So it kind of makes more sense to just let you, you know, continue where you die. That encourages you to, you know, keep plunking in those quarters for the continued play. But regardless of that, it is a fairly challenging game. Yeah, definitely. There could be some frustration.
It feels like that at some point in the arcades, it kind of shifted that way, right?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like the early games, you had to, like, start from the scratch and add another quarter. Whereas, like, Gauntlet and things like that later, all of a sudden it was like, okay, well, I can just add quarters on the fly, which, of course, became sort of the de facto standard in later arcade games.
Yeah, I feel like in, like, the late 80s, that's when it sort of took over with games like Double Dragon and Gauntlet and Final Fight. Just like, oh, you're dead, just plop in a quarter and keep going. And that's where the term quarter muncher came from, I think.
Well, I thought that came from you.
I only eat quarters on very special occasions.
In a bowl with milk?
Something like that.
All right.
Okay, let's move along and talk about some news. So, first and foremost, just before we started recording this podcast, Nintendo dropped a trio of sort of mini bombshell announcements.
They'd love to do that.
They do. Usually they do it right after we record, though, so it was kind of nice of them to do it right before recording this week.
Right. Did you talk to them about that?
Oh, yeah, I totally set up in advance. So their first announcement is that Nintendo Switch Online, it is still coming this year, but it's not hitting until September 2018.
Wow.
So, yeah, this thing is going to be coming out an entire year after it was originally supposed to launch and an entire year and a half after the system came out. I don't believe they've said anything else about it, but hey, I mean, at least we finally have a date for this thing other than just plain old 2018, so I guess that's good. But boy, after waiting all this time, it had better be pretty darn spectacular.
Yeah. You know, I hope that it is.
Yep, me too, of course.
You know, especially now that they've given it an extra year, it feels like, you know, if I had a direct line to Reggie, I would just be like, Reggie, when the online part of this console launches, so far you guys have hit this thing flawlessly. The thing you absolutely need to do is make sure online's great when it starts and don't
mess it up. Yeah.
Launch it and have it be broken and all these problems. And yeah. So let's all fingers crossed that the delay was worth it. Like it usually is.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that unless they, you know, increase the price, it's supposed to be pretty affordable, like $20 per year. You're supposed to get, classic games with online updates.
Mm-hmm.
What else will there be? What else is going to be included in the final release of this thing? We'll find out, several months down the road. But, you know, it's good to know they've actually got a more exact timeline for us.
Yeah, maybe we can have an episode where we just speculate on what you get.
Perhaps. Another announcement from Nintendo, they have confirmed via press release that there is indeed an animated Super Mario Brothers movie in the works. That's a collaboration between themselves and Illumination. That is the studio behind Despicable Me and the Minions franchise. It'll be distributed by Universal, of course. Personally, I find Despicable Me and the Minions to be, you know, fairly vomit-inducing. But it's also going to be cool to know that, yes, indeed, it is true. The rumors are true. There is going to be a Mario movie. And, hey, as much as I don't like the Minions, there's no denying that they've been super popular. And if they can, you know, do that with Mario characters, so we've got, you know, Goombas and Koopas on Amazon box instead of the Minions, that would be amazing.
How do you hate Minions?
How do you not hate Minions? I mean, they're nothing more than Servbot and Rabid knockoffs. And they're awful.
Is it because they rhyme with Funyuns?
No, I don't think they even do.
All right, well, I agree to disagree on that. This announcement's very cool. You know, I've heard the rumor. I think Nintendo kind of hinted at it in their fiscal update or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It is exciting. I think Nintendo has the potential to make some really cool stuff with their properties, and they have. Unfortunately, the biggest ones were terrible. And so I think that this is a cool...
Wait. The biggest ones have been terrible? What do you mean by that? You mean like the old Super Mario Brothers movie?
Yeah, and the Super Mario Super Show, and debatably Captain N, and I don't know. The stuff
Okay, so all the old stuff. Yeah. All the stuff that Nintendo pretends doesn't really exist anymore.
Well, and I think that's... I mean, really, that's to blame for where they're at now, right? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, that's probably why they haven't had any licensed products like that for so many years.
I feel like they got a little butthurt by the whole... just everything about it. And, you know, and then not only that, movie studios are better at animated movies.
Yes, they are.
So you can actually argue that, you know, that medium's come a lot further forward. So I think this is cool. My only hesitation is that it's like kind of crazy to me to lead with Mario, because if it's not good, then, you know, that's really not good. I was actually personally thinking it'd be fun to see a Donkey Kong movie.
Ooh.
Just because they kind of already have the 3D renders of those guys. And, you know, there's so many cutscenes in a lot of those that it just feels like they've almost already done it, and it would be like a equally kind of cool IP, especially with all the Kongs that they've got.
And I don't know, man.
Some of the zany characters. But I am excited that it's a Mario property. I just hope that it's good and they don't botch it. Otherwise, we'll never see anything else.
I don't know. After seeing Donkey Kong Legend of the Crystal Coconuts animated show from back in the day, I mean, as bad as some of the other Nintendo stuff is, that DK thing might be the absolute worst.
I don't know if I've seen that.
It's an abomination. It's amazing, but it's an abomination. You should totally check it out sometime. It's like the worst thing ever created.
Is it like up there with like the Star Wars holiday episode?
I can't really compare it to that. I've never seen it, but just comparing it to other Nintendo properties like Super Mario Super Show and all that, I think DK might be the worst. Mm. Anyway, that aside, I'm glad they're leading with Mario. It makes a ton of sense. Obviously, there's the whole synergy with the Universal theme park as well.
Mm, right.
And, you know, like you said, Nintendo has really been hinting at this. I think we all expected it. We all knew it was coming. But it's really cool that it's made official. And I got my fingers crossed it's going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, now as long as Netflix does well with the Zelda series.
Yeah, we'll see if that really happens.
I'm just kidding. I don't know if that will ever happen.
Yeah, it'd be fun. I hope it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on to the next bit of Nintendo news, they have stated that there is Mario Kart Tour coming out for mobile.
Woo!
It is going to be released in, quote, the fiscal year ending March 2019. So I'm not exactly sure where that places it, but I guess that means it's probably going to be coming out, you know, sometime in about the next 12 months. They haven't said anything else about it, but, you know, obviously Mario Kart is a huge franchise. So in that respect, it does make sense. But on the other hand, you know, what's it really going to be? Will it be a full-fledged Mario Kart, or will it be like their other mobile releases where it's a scaled-back version of Mario or Fire Emblem or Animal Crossing? So, you know, taking those into account, I wouldn't really expect it to be a full-blown Mario Kart game, but, you know, I guess it just remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about how they might monetize this one. You know, would it be like the Super Mario Run approach, where I guess they didn't really have a ton of success with that, where you kind of just buy it, pay the $10 once and you own it? Or would they take something more like a Animal Crossing where there's, you know, tons of incentives to pay money? I really hope that with this one in particular, you're not like getting an advantage for paying a bunch of money. But, you know, we'll see. That remains to be seen.
Yeah, I guess it does. And the other thing that really remains to be seen is, you know, Mario Kart sort of lives and dies by its controls. Mm-hmm. So how will this thing control on mobile? I mean, will it be, you know, accelerating by itself and all you're doing is sort of helping with the steering? Will it be, you know, some other type of game where you're sort of, you know, like the manager more than, you know, just the driver? So it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out on mobile, both as far as, you know, the monetization goes and everything else.
Maybe it'll just be the Lakitu who starts the race, and then that's kind of...
That would be amazing.
that is a good question. You know, in the Switch version, there are many options to basically automate the game. Like, one is, like, it'll always just kind of go forward. You don't really have to use the gas pedal. And then the other option where it's, like, motion controls, so you can just turn the Switch controller and it just kind of moves for you. I think that those features, obviously, for a smartphone make perfect sense. You'd still
have, yeah, I guess they would.
You'd still have item control and all that, but, you know, there is something to be said about having your own gas button. So hopefully there is an option for that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That would make a lot of sense if they borrowed some of those features. That very well may have been a preview of what we'll see in Mario Kart Tour. And, you know, we'll know for sure probably in about a year.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be one of those cases where, like, with Animal Crossing, it was like, oh, yeah, it's out in less than a month.
Well, Animal Crossing, when they first announced, like, I think, like, a couple of years before it.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Out. You're right. After they announced the name, I guess it was like...
Yeah. But, yeah, I think this is, like, their fifth official mobile title, so maybe that's, you know, they announced way back when there's going to be a total of five of them, and if you include Miitomo in that group, then, you know, this would be five mobile games from Nintendo, so, you know, they still have more after that, probably, considering how some were doing. I guess we'll see.
Do we have to include Miitomo? Because it wasn't really a game now, was it?
No, it wasn't. And in fact, I guess that brings us on to another bit of news we wanted to talk about, which is the death of Miitomo. You know, it went down, I guess, about a week or so ago. Nintendo has announced that it is coming to an end. On May 9th, it's all gone. Everything's gone. No more Mii photos, no more outfits, no more answers, No more wallpaper. You can no longer, use real money to purchase in-app currency, but you do get bonus coins and tickets every day you log in. And yeah, the whole thing is going to go away. It seems like the experiment is done with.
Now, did you make it? Did you withstand the test of time?
I have actually continued playing it, yes. I continued playing it almost every day. I think since it launched, I might have missed one day. I think I've continued playing almost every single day since then. Yeah, somehow. Why? I don't know, because it's not very compelling. Nintendo hasn't supported it.
You're a better man than
I. It should have died like a year ago. But I don't know. It was just like some sort of war of wills. I'm like, can I last longer than Nintendo? Will they give up on this before I do?
Right.
Well, we've still got a couple months to answer that question. But yeah, I mean, they could have done so much more with it. They could have added furniture and house decorations.
Totally.
I think, and that would have kept people coming back. And especially if they'd done, you know, like lots of cool Nintendo themed stuff. Like every time they had like, you know, a Zelda giveaway, you know, tied in with Breath of the Wild or a Mario giveaway, you know, people would log back in, be like, oh, look, here are some people that I haven't seen play this game in months and months, and here they're back. But then they would stop that, and then, you know, no one would really care anymore. It just relied too much on, you know, other people writing interesting things. There wasn't enough of that. There wasn't enough guidance. There wasn't enough hands-on reasons to keep people coming back.
Right.
So, you know, I had a ton of friends sign on initially, including lots of people, you know, that were still at Nintendo. And then, like, after 2 months, even they were gone.
Right.
Now it's just, like, a handful of people. I don't think any of them I know in real life. It's, like, you know, a few listeners of the show and a few random people. I don't even know who they are. And those are the only people I interact with there. But, yeah, it's gone. And I can't really say it's a shame because it was such a wasteland and nobody really was using it anymore.
Right.
But I did like a lot of the ideas. I thought some of the stuff was interesting, and I'd love to see, you know, this sort of social aspect, chatting integrated into a full-fledged game, like, you know, make it part of Animal Crossing or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that encourages, you know, social interaction in different ways, but I think this is something they could continue to run with.
Right. You know, it does have that, like, Tomodachi Life kind of feel to it. I just wish that they'd gone more in that direction. It felt like maybe they were trying to steer away from it because obviously they don't want to have the same game on mobile as they have, you know, on console that they're charging premium for. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it feels like it was, you know, MAL supported. And they started off so strong. Like, I remember, you know, in my job that's totally not video game related, it kind of had major buzz and people were playing it every day. And then about a month or two in, it was like, oh, yeah, I don't know why I'm still playing this.
Total ghost town.
Yep. Well, that and, like, there were some odd choices with the loading times and just, you know, on mobile, it's hard to pick it up and play it in, you know, small increments because you only get so long. And if you have a commute on the subway or something, you don't always have Wi-Fi connection all the time.
That's true.
So, yeah, it's had multiple reasons. But, yeah, I hope that it does come back in some form, like you said.
Yeah, or at least some of the ideas that were in it should be, you know, it'd be nice if they came back in some form.
Right.
Anyway, I'm going to keep using it until the very bitter end. If there are any listeners out there who are not on my friends list, look me up. We can chat until the whole thing goes up in smoke.
I think Nintendo like should send you something like a sympathy card or, you know, sorry for your loss.
Yes, I will look forward to it. Okay, moving along to some other third-party game announcements. This one was announced a couple of weeks ago, but I kind of missed out on the initial announcement, so we're catching up a little bit. But there is a new Scribblenauts on the way coming to Switch. It is called Scribblenauts Showdown. It is hitting on March 6th from the folks at Warner Brothers Interactive.
Hmm. Is that like a showcase showdown?
Well, it is in a way, and by that I mean it's very multiplayer focused.
Oh.
It's going to have a showdown mode, which is like a board game mode for up to four players.
Wow.
So, yeah, you are competing against other Scribblenauts players. Sometimes you're just trying to solve a problem the quickest, or sometimes you're actually going head-to-head. There are apparently over 25 mini-games. I don't really know how they play, but they've shown screenshots of some of them, but they involve, like, a dance-off, an eating contest, a game of Frisbee, a cooking game, a race, a tug-of-war. And, of course, you know, this is Scribblenauts, so it all involves Scribblenauts rules, which is about using words. You know, that was what was so cool about that game, is that it has this 35,000 word vocabulary. You write the word, it appears in the game, and you use it to solve a puzzle. Now, I'm not really sure, you know, how you're playing a game of Frisbee and you type capybara. What does that do? How does that help you win or lose? I don't really know, but, you know, I'm interested in finding out.
Yeah, me too.
Now, have you played the Scribblenauts games very much? Are you particularly familiar with the franchise?
You know, I played the original. Since then, I haven't really played much of it, but I have, you know, watched a trailer here and there.
Okay.
I love the concept. I mean, it is really fun.
Yeah, it's totally brilliant.
So I am curious about the Switch version. The last time I played it was on, you know, I think DS.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it 3DS?
I believe there was a 3DS game or two. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I played the first one, which I believe was on Nintendo DS.
Yes.
And so I can imagine that the graphics have probably gotten much better since then, especially if it's on a console.
Well, they're certainly sharper, but they are retaining the classic Scribblenauts style.
Yeah, and I you know, wouldn't expect any less, but it is nice to be able to have, like, not only the graphical power, but the processing power beefed up, so you can, like, really go crazy with, like, Cthulhu and fire trucks and things that are bananas popping up.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of that's going to go into, you know, having four players doing this stuff, crazy stuff at once.
Yeah, totally.
In addition to the multiplayer modes, there is going to be a sandbox mode with eight different environments, presumably, you know, lots of little objectives and puzzles to solve, and that will incorporate a multiplayer component as well. The one, you know, little concern I have is that this has a new developer. Scribblenauts was conceived, created, and developed by a company called Fifth Cell.
Right.
And they are not involved with this one.
No.
You know, it's my understanding that, you know, they almost don't even exist anymore. Like, you know, they were working on some Scribblenauts mobile title and it got canceled. And now they're down to just like a very small crew. This is being made by a recent startup developer called Shiver. You wouldn't really know it from looking at the screenshots. It looks like traditional Scribblenauts, But yeah, it's a brand new developer, so it'll be interesting to see what they bring to the table, or you know, how they change from the previous versions of this game.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that it retains the same feeling, you know?
Yeah, me too, me too. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. I really did like Scribblenauts in the past, so yeah, I'm curious to see how this one turns out, especially with this multiplayer focus.
Yeah, should be good.
Also announced recently, the folks at Limited Run Games have finally confirmed their first Switch titles. They are going to be Flint Hook and Mercenary Kings Reloaded Edition. There's no release date for these titles yet, no prices yet, but of course these guys are known for taking digital releases and then, you know, turning them into physical form and giving them a, as the name implies, a limited physical release. Mercenary Kings is a 2D non-linear run-and-gun title. It's sort of like Metal Slug meets Metroid, right, with four-player co-op. Mm-hmm. And this game hits very soon, February 6th, next week, on Switch digitally. And then Flint Hook is this game where you are a space pirate with a grappling hook and slow-mo powers. You know, you can sort of instigate bullet time, and you're grappling all over the place and shooting and looting and, you know, just dashing through these randomly generated levels. And that game, I don't believe, has a release date on Switch yet digitally. It's just coming soon. But both these games look pretty cool. Are you familiar with either of these games in their previous forms, you know, when they've been released on other consoles? You looking forward to this stuff?
Yeah, I believe I played the first Mercenary Kings, and it is, it, like, Metal Slug is probably the best way to describe that.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely sounds exciting, especially if there's, you know, some local multiplayer available on that.
Yep, believe there is.
And then this Flint Hook, it looks really cool.
It does.
The, you know, everything's a little bit small, like, on the scale-wise, but also very detailed. Still got that sort of pixel art, but highly polished look to it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, both these games sound like worthy additions to the Switch lineup.
Yeah, they seem pretty cool.
Although I'm starting to get to the point now where the Switch has too many freaking little indie games that I want to play and no time to play it. So
yeah, that is probably one of the things about Switch, but I guess overall it's you know, not the worst problem to have, you know?
No.
Rather have too many good things than not enough. But yeah, if you're interested in these, you should probably keep an ear out. If it's like past releases from Limited Run Games, they'll probably sell out very, very quickly once they go up for sale on their website. And speaking of digital games going physical on Switch, Wonder Boy The Dragon's Trap for Switch has a release date in physical form. It is coming out on February 13th from the folks at Nicholas.
Cool.
This game, of course, came out originally around Switch launch in digital form.
Yep.
But this version will include reversible cover art, a full-color manual, a soundtrack sampler CD, and a PVC character strap keychain.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you've played the one on Switch already.
Yes.
Is it worth...
And this game is the same.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's a really, really good game.
All right.
I mean, this was a remake of a Sega Master System game, but it's been totally enhanced with hand-drawn HD visuals, an orchestral soundtrack, and it just plays really, really well. It's beautiful. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, you certainly could still pick up the digital version, but if you like the extra goodies, if you like having it in physical form, then, you know, this will be a great way to do it. I mean, if I didn't have it already, I would definitely be jumping on this immediately.
So I got to ask, will you be picking up the physical version anyway?
I'm on the fence. Funds are a little tight right now, but I would like to.
Right. No, I understand. But yeah, that is cool that, you know, they sold enough that obviously they think it's worthy of a physical release. So that's good news.
Yeah, Limited Run actually did a physical PS4 version a while back, and it sold out pretty much instantly. So there's clearly an appetite for this title in physical form. Hopefully the Switch version follows suit. And then one more upcoming release on Switch I want to discuss is Wild Guns Reloaded. It is coming out in early 2018, according to the folks at Natsume, and this is a very fun, excellent, futuristic, sci-fi, Wild West third-person shooter. I don't know if you ever played this on the Super NES, Pete, but you know, it was a pretty cool shooter there, and this is a follow-up to that with four players and new playable characters, including a dog. There's a playable dog who runs around shooting like robot cowboys and stuff. How could you not like that?
Yeah. No, I did actually play this one back in the day. It's a
Oh, nice,
it's a great game, or at least the original one.
Yeah, the original was a lot of fun. I've only played this a little bit on modern systems. It came out on PS4, I think, about a year ago, and that was pretty darn fun, but I really haven't played that much of it. So I will probably use this excuse to pick up the Switch version and then finally give it a go and play all the way through it. This version does add a few new features. It adds a beginner mode if the original game was too hard, because shooters can be pretty hard. But then there's also a new boss rush time attack, which is one of the more challenging things you can do in the game. Try to take on all the bosses in order and see how long you can survive. So this was a pretty cool game from what I have played on PlayStation 4, and it's pretty neat to see it coming to Switch.
Yeah, that's cool. Are they releasing like a zapper for it, or?
No, it's not that kind of game. I mean, you still control a character. You are a character on the screen. You can jump, you can roll, and then you can aim your gun and shoot into the background. So it's not a light gun style game. You actually do have a character to control. So yeah, it's got everything you could really want out of a classic pixel art type shooter game.
Maybe I haven't played the original, but it sounds fun. So yeah, I'll give it a try.
It's pretty neat, and I believe the original is like on Wii and Wii U Virtual Console. If you did want to check it out,
The more you know.
All right, let's get into some listener mail. And this first letter comes from listener Brian Booth. And I apologize because he sent this one a couple weeks ago right after the Nintendo Direct Mini. So sorry if some of this sounds a little bit dated, but here we go. He writes, "Really enjoyed your thoughts on the Direct. I'm excited about the new Kirby and Tropical Freeze's Switch port, since I didn't pick it up the first time. I also noticed that, unintentionally or otherwise, you guys took a page from the Big N's playbook and experimented with a different structure than usual. Was that intentional?" And to answer that, that was the episode where we opened with our big topic covering the Nintendo Direct Mini. And I wouldn't say it was exactly a coincidence, but we did it not because they changed their structure, but because we do change it up occasionally when the big topic is a recent bit of big news. So that's why we did it for that episode. His letter continues, "The episode may have dropped before the news hit, but I was a little surprised you didn't mention anything about Detective Pikachu's upcoming US release. I also don't recall any comments a few weeks ago about Ryan Reynolds being cast as Pikachu for the film version. Do you have any thoughts on this? Do you think it will get any action in the States, since the popular opinion is that the 3DS is on the way out now?" Now, Brian is correct. We had not heard the news about Detective Pikachu coming out when we recorded that episode, so we ended up going into the following episode. But, Pete, you were not around in that episode to discuss Detective Pikachu, so I would like to hear, do you have any thoughts about this game or the movie or anything surrounding this upcoming release?
I mean, I think that it's funny that the actor that's playing Deadpool is also playing Detective Pikachu.
In the movie version, not the game version, I don't think.
Right. In the movie.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't really know much about Ryan Reynolds other than him being Deadpool.
Yeah.
I don't really know of him as a voice actor, so it's kind of weird. No idea how it'll translate, but okay, all right, fine.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just going to be him saying Pika Pika.
No, I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be a tough-talking Detective Pikachu, just like in the game.
Yeah, I'm kidding, kind of.
I'm pretty sure that's what we're going to get.
But if you got Bradley Cooper playing, Rocket Raccoon on...
Yeah, exactly.
Guardians of the Galaxy, who knows? But, I think it's cool. Anytime, along with the, Super Mario Brothers, movie that's coming out, it's cool anytime Nintendo products kind of get, a mass market exposure.
Oh, sure.
He does have a good point about the 3DS sort of being on the way out here. So it does lead me to believe that maybe there's a Switch version waiting in the wings, at least in the U.S., because it will be a little while before it's out.
I don't know. I mean, Pokemon has a habit of always coming in at the end of a system's life cycle.
Yeah.
With the Nintendo DS, they did Pokemon Black 2 and White 2. Even though that system was already replaced by the 3DS,
right.
And nobody cared, it still did great. We got Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, even though the 3DS was on its way out, and I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I suspect it did pretty darn well. And I imagine this one will too. I mean, it's not going to do gangbusters, it's not going to do mainline Pokemon numbers, but I'm sure it'll do fairly well for itself.
You have a very compelling point there. I know I will actually probably see this movie in the theater. Potentially. I don't know. Depends. Now that I literally just visualize myself sitting in this movie theater and I just can't see it happening now, but I probably will go see it. If not, try to watch it as soon as it's available online.
I'm kind of undecided about the movie, but I think I'm definitely going to pick up the game. You know, obviously, I'm going to have to get that giant-sized amiibo. But after looking at the trailer and seeing what the game is about, actually, I don't know anything about the game after looking at the trailer. It's like, you know, like 60 seconds of cutscenes and maybe some QuickTime events, and I still really don't know what the gameplay is all about.
They had you at 4-inch Pikachu amiibo. Come on.
Well, that's true, but they also kind of had me at 3DS, because I still love my 3DS, I still use my 3DS, and, you know, maybe that's going to be the last, you know, major first-party 3DS release. I want to have it in my library. Plus, I do like detective games, so if it's like, you know, Professor Layton or Ace Attorney, but you're playing as a talking Pikachu, I mean, that's awesome. So
yeah.
I'm totally going to have to get this one when it comes out in March.
I could see you, like, if it does have, like, Ace Attorney elements, you being very excited.
It looks interesting, that's for sure. Our next letter comes from listener Jeffrey Skull, who wrote in with some comments about Nintendo Labo. He writes, "Well, you got your wish. You asked for Nintendo to do something much more interesting with the HD Rumble, and Nintendo delivered. As a father of three young children, I am excited to share these activities with my kids, but I'm dreading them getting too excited while holding the Switch. The cardboard I can replace, the Switch itself is a different matter." Pete, you weren't here for the episode about Nintendo Labo. You have any thoughts on this bizarre upcoming Switch game slash peripheral?
I do kind of wonder. I feel like you could go two ways. You could either think it's really cool or be kind of calling shenanigans on cardboard. So I'm really kind of curious which
way. I am worried about the durability.
You're leaning. But my personal opinion is that it's kind of awesome. It's something out of like the Nintendo think tank, and stuff that comes out can be good, can be bad. You never know. But it is something that's just kind of different, and it has the potential to be really cool.
It's definitely different.
I've seen people kind of poo-pooing the cardboard thing. Is saying, you know, I'm not paying $80 for cardboard.
You're paying for a game plus the cardboard.
Exactly. That's the number
one.
It's like
$20, $30 for cardboard.
I mean, but it is funny that I've, you know, that's kind of what I've seen online and people kind of poo-pooing it. It's like, don't forget that there's actually software with it, and the software is what you're really paying for.
But it really comes down to, are you going to get it?
You know, I think I will. I am kind of curious to see what, like, you know, the public perception is. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have any children, but if I did, it would definitely be a...
That's what I tell my lawyer, too.
It would definitely be a compelling software to buy for that purpose. You know, having something to kind of build with the kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's who it's for. It's for families and kids.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense in that regard. That being said, if I get to actually be a robot and punch stuff, I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's definitely out there. It's definitely wacky, and you know, you're not going to see anything like it anywhere else. So I'm certainly intrigued.
I'm also intrigued by the piano because, you know, Nintendo, of course, Mario Paint always has like little hooks of that kind of functionality in other software. And I wonder if it does have some sort of super deep music player in it, which would be another reason for me to purchase. So I am just kind of curious to see what the reviews are. I'm going to take them with a grain of salt because I know some people get a little jaded about that kind of stuff. But I do just kind of want to see what the overall consensus is of how it's being received.
Yep, well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Jeffrey's letter continues. The NP Top 285 article is my personal favorite list. Would you be able to tell me what 3DS and Wii U games are on your list, as the 3DS got cut off rather early in its life on the list, and the Wii U, of course, isn't represented at all? Of course, this was a list that appeared in the final issue of Nintendo Power. Mm. Another question, how far are you on the various mobile games? Did you rescue Daisy in the Remix World and even beat Star World in Super Mario Run? Do you play through every chapter of Fire Emblem? And what level is your Animal Crossing guy? Okay. All right. That's a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Starting with games I would try to add to the NP Top 285 list. Mm. Stuff I would personally add from Wii U and from 3DS.
Be careful, Chris. It's a trap.
Well, I'm not going to try to get into the details, but you know, off the top of my head, I think Super Mario 3D World would definitely be in there.
Yep.
Super Mario Maker, definitely.
Yep.
Mario Kart 8. Mm-hmm. Probably Shantae Half Genie Hero. Probably Shovel Knight for sure. I think Axiom Verge would definitely go there. You know, my personal policy is to wait a year before adding anything, so I'm not going to say Breath of the Wild yet, but you know, that is kind of a no-brainer. On 3DS, I think A Link Between Worlds, Pokemon Sun and Moon, VVVVVV, and probably Ace Attorney 5 and or 6. Probably one of those would go on there. Those are the ones that come to me off the top of my head. What about you, Pete?
I didn't hear you say Metroid for 3DS, which...
Oh, like I said, I'd wait a year before I decide to put that one. I'm talking about Samus Returns.
Yes, of course.
I'm not putting on Metroid Soccer Ball game or whatever it's called, or Federation Force or whatever. I could definitely see Samus Returns going on there. Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably put that on there. But then on Wii U, I think I'd probably have to say Wonderful 101.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that'd be a solid choice.
All right, cool. As for his other question about the mobile games, boy, how far am I? No, in Super Mario Run, I just played through the main game, and I really haven't played much more than that. It's weird because I love the game, and I would call it one of my favorite mobile games, but I don't know, I just haven't kept up with all the Toad Run and all that extra optional stuff after you've beat the main game. Fire Emblem, I gave up on fairly quickly because I didn't like how I was just trying to milk me for all I'm worth to try to get all these different characters. So I think I only played up to, like chapter 7 in that game. And then as for Animal Crossing, I think I'm up to about level 55 now.
Holy.
I know I've said bad things about that game in the past, like it's kind of boring and not that compelling, but whatever it is, I still keep playing. And I'm like, oh, look, new characters, got to keep playing, got to get friends with them. I don't really know why, but yeah, I've been playing that one a lot. Can't really explain.
That doesn't mean much to me because you still play Miitomo, so.
This is true. I must hate myself. What about you?
Let's see. So Super Mario Run, same thing, played through the main story. I know they keep adding content and stuff. There's new versions of levels and stuff.
Right.
So I am kind of bummed out that I haven't tried that. But like you, I feel like I just kind of moved on, even though I liked it. Fire Emblem I got really into for a while. I was maxing out characters and evolving them into... basically, you could start over with them, but they teach them new stuff, which was pretty cool. But then, yeah, I kind of grew tired of that too, not being able to ever get a super powerful axe guy.
And my axe.
I think it was Hector was the impossible one you could never get from a free pack, which was kind of irritating. Miitomo, I played for the initial 3 months. I tried to carry on like you, but nowhere near the perseverance that you have. And then this last one, Animal Crossing, I played it through the holidays and I really enjoyed it and even found myself spending a tiny bit of money just to finish my candy cane set or something.
Yeah, I still haven't spent a dime.
Yeah, yeah. I just figured, I was like, you know what? Like, I can throw these guys a couple bucks here, just make it worthwhile. But I really like that game. I just, again, kind of have a hard time always being on Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And wanting to play it. So it's kind of fallen by the wayside, but that game I might actually go back to.
So what level are you at?
I think I made it to 25 or 30, somewhere in there. Probably closer to 25. But yeah, I put in some solid work. But I can't imagine how long it takes to get to 55.
Yeah, I probably play, maybe 2 sessions a day. That probably adds up to, 50 minutes, maybe an hour. Okay, on to our next and final listener letter. This one comes from TJ McCart, and he writes in response to the localization big topic we had last episode. He says, I feel that a series that needs recognition for having stellar localization is Dragon Quest. Mm-hmm. I can understand how their handling of accents might not be universally loved, but everything else about them is so well done. The puns, the sentence structure, conversation flow, it's all very masterfully handled. Dragon Quest VII on 3DS took forever to come out in the West, but it was so well done that the wait was worth it. TJ, I'm not really in a position to argue. I have to admit, I have never actually finished a Dragon Quest game, and that bothers me to no end because I buy them all with the intention to play them, but then I always get sidetracked and never do it. Yeah, but there's a lot of really well-localized games that we didn't get into on last episode, and I'm sure they deserve lots of recognition, so I appreciate you giving a shout-out to the series.
Now, Chris, you've played the Builders demo, right? I know you just talked about it recently.
Yeah, we talked about that last week as well. Mm-hmm.
Did you see the part where they run into the guy with the beard?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I took a screenshot of that. I'm going to send it to you and nail it to your profile somehow.
After I played through it, I was kind of shocked you hadn't already. I was like, wow, this guy looks kind of like me, and there's a lot of talk of beard and Yeah, it's pretty funny.
We'll find some use for it. Please look forward to it. One last thought on Dragon Quest localization. It is worth mentioning, of course, that former Nintendo Power managing editor Scott Pelland was the one who came up with the phrase, "a slime draws near." So that legendary bit of localization is due to a Nintendo Power writer. Just thought I'd point that out.
Wow.
You didn't know that, Pete?
I didn't, but I like it.
Yep. It's true, as far as I know.
Sweet.
All right. This seems like a good place to take an intermission, so let's do that. And then we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is best gaming nemeses. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is best gaming nemeses.
Mm-hmm.
And by nemesis, I mean a rival who cannot be beat or overcome, a rival who is always there to thwart the other character in some way. We aren't necessarily talking about, like arch enemies who are trying to fight to the death. Like, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to have like Link versus Ganon on my list because... they aren't really nemeses so much as they just want to kill each other for the most part. Same with Samus and Mother Brain. Maybe Sonic and Dr. Robotnik could have been considered nemeses, but in the most recent game in Sonic Forces, Robotnik is literally torturing and threatening to kill Sonic. And in my opinion, this whole nemeses thing, it's all fun and games until someone loses an eye. So I'm trying to go with something that's more along the lines of, an unbeatable rival. Mm. Even if you think they're beat, they come back time and time and time again, and they're always getting in the other character's way. And so... that is what we're focusing on when we're discussing gaming's greatest nemeses in this week's big topic.
It's basically like me and you in real life.
Yes, pretty much exactly that. And warning, there will be spoilers as we're talking about some of these characters' history. So be warned, spoilers will be coming.
Mm-hmm.
So let's jump into this list. I'm going to kick it off with one of my picks, and I am going to go with Solid Snake and the cyborg ninja from Metal Gear Solid, the Twin Snakes.
Oh man, nice call.
Now, when Solid Snake first encounters the cyborg ninja, he intervenes. The cyborg ninja intervenes and stops Revolver Ocelot from doing some bad stuff. He ends up, saving a guy you're trying to rescue, and he chops off Revolver Ocelot's arm, and it's like, oh man, this guy is kind of crazy, but he helped me out. And then you encounter him later, and if you try fighting him, which you have to do, but if you try using your weapons, you literally can't defeat him. You have to fight him fairly. You have to fight hand-to-hand on equal terms. And when you do that, you can actually fight him, you can beat him, and then you can actually take him out.
Yeah, a little CQC.
I don't think that was in that game yet, but yes, I know what you're saying. But, when you take him out, it's like there's something wrong with him. Like he's having some sort of mental breakdown. It's not that you just really got the better of him as it was that, something happened to him. He, screams, the medicine, and, he just sort of runs off in that fight. Then, of course, you find out.
We had a fight like that once.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to cut me with a sword and all that. But, of course, in the end, he helps you fight Metal Gear, and you learn that he's been the guy on the radio giving you, behind-the-scenes advice the whole time. And furthermore, he was actually a friend from your first adventure who you rescue, and then he was an enemy who you fought in Metal Gear 2, which only came out in Japan for the longest time. And so they fight, but they also help each other. And to me, that really exemplifies the best kind of nemesis relationship. So that's why I'm picking Snake and the Cyborg Ninja, a.k.a. Gray Fox, as some of gaming's greatest nemesis.
All right. I like where your head's at, Chris.
Okay.
I guess I wasn't sure where you were going with this topic, so I want to hear another one of yours, because I want to get another metric of what you're thinking a nemesis truly is.
Okay, well, the next one I'm going to go with is Mega Man and Dr. Wily. And of course, you know, these guys, you know, it's the hero and the villain of this game series. You know, Wily is Mega Man's arch enemy from the very beginning. But the other thing is, you kind of get the feeling he's not really trying that hard to be a villain, to conquer the world. You know, he's sort of a mischief maker. He talks big, and he makes these robots, and he takes over other robots, and he tries to, you know, conquer a city or whatever. But really, how bad can this guy be? He's like making robot animals. Like, here's a robot cat I'm going to attack you with and whatnot. And, you know, he right. accidentally happens to make his robots always vulnerable to each other's weapons. Uh-huh. Sure. You know, so I think that he's kind of just, you know, playing around. He is sort of a playful guy. And that's why Mega Man and Dr. Light, you'll always believe there's good in him. And that's why they let Wily join them again in Mega Man 3. And that's why they help him with the robo-enzovirus in Mega Man 10. And of course, every time Dr. Wily is tricking them, he's like, ha-ha, I wasn't really on your side. Ha-ha, I'm the one who created the virus. I fooled you. And, you know, then Mega Man, you know, foils his plans. But then, you know, he'll also try to rescue Dr. Wily if Dr. Wily is, like, in fatal danger. And, of course, there was that one part at the end of Mega Man 7 when Mega Man said he was going to kill Dr. Wily. But he didn't. He didn't. They got, you know, they patched things up, I guess. But, you know, they are definitely always there to get in each other's way and thwart one another. So that's why they are another one of my picks.
Chris, I really want you to make a YouTube video where you just talk about this. And I want to see gameplay footage, and I want to hear your thoughts. Like, I think you're doing a disservice by not doing something like that.
Yeah, if I ever learn this video capture thing, maybe I'll look into it. So I want to know what's on your list, man. Come on.
What's on my list? So I went a little more unorthodox, I think. You know, the one that popped into my head first and foremost really was Animal Crossing. And I was thinking, you know,
Animal Crossing.
Yeah, I was like, you know, the villager, your biggest nemesis in that game is Tom Nook, right?
I guess you're not wrong about that. He, like, is there to thwart you at every turn.
Like, you could just have all the fun in the world in that game, but he's just constantly there to remind you that you owe him money, and you don't really have an option in the matter. You know, minute one, you're checking into town, and he's already got you by the short hairs. And
that's
then,
right, he's like literally picking your pockets.
And then, you know, each time you pay off your debt, he convinces you to buy something more. So, yeah, I think, you know, there is no other character in that game. I mean, you can say Mr. Rossetti, but he's not really so much of a block you at every turn type guy. Gotta say, it's Tom Nook. He's kind of a, you know, he feels like a mob boss in a way. Like, you just can't escape
Well, he probably
him.
Is. He probably is.
He's always there, always watching, always waiting.
Yeah, well, it's a very one-sided nemesis relationship, but yes, I suppose you are right. He is there to stop you, the player, from having fun and having any cash in your wallet. So, okay. All right. I will accept it.
All right. What else you got?
My next one would be Phoenix Wright and Miles Edgeworth from the Ace Attorney series. I suppose that one's predictable, given how much I like the Ace Attorney games. But yes, you know, those two have a fantastic cycle of friendship and rivalry. They were childhood friends, and Edgeworth's defense of and friendship with Phoenix as a kid was a big factor in what made Phoenix become a lawyer. And then, as an adult, they end up on opposite sides, and right. You know, both of them will basically stop at nothing to achieve victory. And Edgeworth is like, no, go away. But then Phoenix has to defend Edgeworth from a murder charge. And so then they become friends again. And even after that, they're still going at it in court. And, you know, that's, you know, I think what makes them true nemeses. Like, Edgeworth will always thwart Phoenix time and time and time again. Like, Phoenix will bring something up, and then Edgeworth will be like, oh, nope. I've got something that proves you wrong. You didn't know about this. And then if Phoenix is like, ah, oh, what do I do? But then in the end, Phoenix always manages to turn it around and emerge victorious and stop Edgeworth, and the cycle just always repeats. I'm not sure that Edgeworth has actually ever beat Phoenix in a case, But, you know, certainly in the latest games, they're allies as well as adversaries, which, again, is a, I think, excellent nemesis relationship.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's funny. And they have great banter back and forth, don't they?
Yes, they do.
I always see you sharing tweets with screenshots of their dialogue.
Yes, that game does have some fantastic dialogue. It's not only just between them, it's between all the lawyers, really, but yeah.
Right.
You're definitely right
and
about that.
And sometimes the occasional judge.
Yes, with his big burly beard.
That's right.
Okay, what else you got?
Well, let's see. Mine are mainly all first party, first second party. So I guess I was thinking along the lines of Pokemon.
Oh, okay. I think that's good. There's lots of rivalries in that series.
There is, and there's one that's, you know, sort of been under the radar that I heard wind of when I was at NOA, Nintendo of America, and this is kind of an interesting fact. So Pikachu is number 25 on the original Pokédex.
Okay.
And do you know who number 52 is? Any guess?
Not off the top of my head. Sorry. Nope.
It actually turns out it's Meowth.
Oh, okay.
And it was actually intentional that they did that. Apparently, they thought, you know, 25 backwards is 52.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's no coincidence because I guess, you know, Meowth is really viewed as his rival on the show more than anything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I just always thought that fact was kind of interesting. And when you think about it, when you watch the show, they really are sort of rivals. They, you know, neither one ever beats the other one. And they don't really have a ton of direct fighting, especially in the games. But it is kind of fun to imagine, you know, Meowth and Pikachu being bitter rivals. Now, another fun fact. Do you know why Meowth is the only Pokemon that can talk? Did you ever see the episode where he learns to talk?
I have not, I'm sorry to say.
It's actually, he was trying to impress a girl.
Uh-huh. Well, that's how I learned to talk as well.
they don't really go into much more detail than that, but that's kind of where it happened and why he didn't stop talking. He's the only Pokemon that can actually say anything other than his name over and over.
Well, except now we have Detective Pikachu,
right.
And he can talk, so there the rivalry continues. Now they are both talking Pokemon.
Yeah,
so,
that's true, wow.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Only Meowth's not Ryan Reynolds.
No, he's not.
He's like Danny DeVito or something.
Okay, my next pick, continuing the Capcom theme from my last choice. I suppose this is another fairly obvious one, but I'm going with Ryu and Ken from Street Fighter.
Ah. Now, see, I would have pegged you for Ryu and Sagat.
That's a good choice, too. You know, I could see that one being a very good option as well. But, I mean, that mostly revolves around, you know, Sagat being the champion and, you know, Ryu defeating him. And then, you know, Sagat was always out for revenge. But with Ryu and Ken, they're like, you know, endless rivals.
That's true.
And they have the nearly identical abilities. I mean, Sagat's are very similar since he's got that fireball and he's got the Tiger Uppercut. But, you know, Ken and Ryu, they both got the fireball, the Hurricane Kick, the Shoryuken. And, you know, obviously, originally, they were pretty much clones of each other.
Right.
And they've evolved and become differentiated over the years. But, you know, as the canon goes, they have trained together and they always are fighting each other to get even stronger.
Right.
And I think Ryu canonically, you know, holds more victories over Ken. But, you know, they are always there to bring out the best in each other, which, you know, that isn't necessarily what I would say about Sagat. I mean, it's kind of true with them, too. But, you know, with Ryu and Ken, it's like, you know, we are always fighting to improve ourselves and, you know, become better martial arts. So that's why I'm going to stick with that as my choice from that game.
It's kind of like me and you. Iron sharpens iron or beard sharpens beard, I guess, right?
Yeah, something like that. And, you know, I have a big scar on my chest from where you uppercutted me, too. So
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, it happens. You know, I hit you with a chair that one time.
It is funny that they are, you know, these endless rivals that just kind of mess with each other. I was imagining, I don't know, I forget which Bruce Lee movie it is, but there's a movie where Bruce Lee fights Chuck Norris. I think it's Enter the Dragon. But anyways, I always thought that that's kind of where they might have gotten that from. But, you know, because Ken's the American and Ryu's this probably diligent student of the art. And, you know, Ken's got the long hair and doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Probably angsty teenager or something. So just kind of funny to imagine. that's where they got the inspiration.
It's probably not, but I will let you continue to think that.
How dare you?
However, like I said, I do like your Ryu and Sagat choice. That is also an excellent pick.
Yeah, I know my Street Fighter history.
So what's next for you?
Oh, boy, this is where mine goes real off the rails here.
Okay. Bring it.
So I was thinking about it, and, you know, I really wanted to come up with a Punch-Out one.
Hmm.
And Little Mac, he obviously is on one end of the spectrum. But then I was thinking, who is the person that he's fought more than anyone?
It's a good question.
And there's one person that came to my mind. And maybe it's just because he was my rival growing up. But Bald Bull.
Yeah, that's a fair choice.
Yeah, so the reason why I came to that conclusion is in the first one, in the original Punch-Out, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, I guess you'd call it, or Mr. Dream. He fights Bald Bull, I believe it's twice, or is it three times in the...
I think it's twice.
Yeah, twice as you're playing through the main game. And then in Super Punch-Out, he also makes an appearance, which is kind of rare. There weren't too many characters that were in both.
Yeah, there were only a handful. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he also appears in the Wii version, but so do plenty of other characters.
Yeah.
Now, you can make a case for Super Macho Man, but he doesn't appear twice in the original. And Bald Bull just has this, like, he basically mocks you. He's like, you know, he's five times bigger than Little Mac. And just kind of, you know, for me, blocked me at every turn as I was growing up trying to beat this guy. So I don't know. My personal belief is that if Little Mac had a rival, it would have to be Bald Bull. What say you?
Boy, yeah, that is a tough one. I really can't think of anyone better in the Punch-Out series than Bald Bull. He's put in just as many appearances as pretty much anybody. I suppose, you know, there could be an argument being made for King Hippo just because of him being in Captain N, having those hypnotic giant blue nipples. But Little Mac wasn't in that, so I don't think that has any bearing on anything. So, sure, I am down with this pick.
You were just looking for a way to say blue nipples.
This is very true. This is true. Not going to deny it.
That's why we're rivals.
Well, speaking of blue nipples, my next pair of nemeses would be Kirby and Meta Knight.
Nice.
And I'll be honest, I don't know the Kirby lore that well, but I like the fact that Meta Knight keeps showing up over and over again to stop Kirby, but in his own unique, chivalrous way. I like the fact that he is basically, you know, also a roly-poly puffball, but, you know, he's blue, he's dark, he's sort of the anti-Kirby, and, you know, whatever their history, you know, neither of them ever give up. They always come back and duke it out with each other again and again. And, you know, I think when it comes down to it, you know, Meta Knight will be there to lend a hand as well. So that's why I'm going with these two.
Yeah, it's a good choice. Meta Knight's kind of a fan favorite, and I kind of like him because you never really know what his intentions are. Like, you're never sure if he's a good guy or a bad guy. He kind of
he
waffles. But yeah, that's a great example of undying rivalry.
Yep, that's for sure. What's your next one?
So I had to Google this one because I wasn't actually sure. And then as soon as I looked, I was like, oh, yeah, I knew that. but Captain Falcon, his rival apparently in the game is Samurai Goro.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it's also obvious once you hear that, because yeah, I think even in the original it was kind of set up that they were rivals. They don't really ever go into too much explanation of why, but at the same time, I almost think like a less is more approach is kind of fun because you kind of get to draw your own conclusions of why they might be rivals and, you know, what's the backstory there? Why do they hate each other so much? And you know, one's a captain, one's a samurai. What's their beef?
Interesting. See, if I was going to pick a rival or a nemesis for Captain Falcon, I might have to go with Captain Olimar, because not only are they both captains, but we all know about how Captain Falcon murdered all of his Pikmin. So I might be inclined to go with it on that alone.
Now, see, I think Captain Olimar's rival is just Nightfall.
Well, that might be true as well. I'm not sure it's a nemesis, but it's definitely a rival there to thwart him time and time again. You're not wrong about that.
All right, Chris, you've dabbled in the third parties too long. What do you got first party-wise?
Okay, well, I guess I'm going to go with Samus and Ridley.
Ah.
And I know this kind of violates what I was saying earlier on. I say this is sort of the exception that proves the rule, because this is not a friendly rivalry at all. But Ridley is definitely Samus's nemesis.
Oh, absolutely.
He is always there at just the wrong time. You know, starting with Super Metroid, you know, you think you're going to save that Metroid in the space station that's been attacked, and then boom, out of the shadows, there is Ridley to stop you from getting the Metroid back. And he shows up, and you have to fight him, and he flies off no matter how much you shoot him, and he makes off with the Metroid.
Yeah, you're right. He just never dies.
Yeah, and then in, you know, the Metroid Prime games, after you think you've killed him off, no, he's back, and now he's got metal wings.
Yep.
In Other M, you think he's dead, and somehow he's turned into some weird other kind of critter. Zero Mission, you know, you defeated him once, and then in the added content that was, you know, put into Zero Mission, you know, you have to fight like a big Robo Ridley at the end. And then, you know, here's another spoiler. Of course, there's that new stuff added to Metroid Samus Returns. You know, the game should be over. You're heading back to your ship. And who shows up? Well, of course, it's Ridley to be the new final boss in the game to stand in your way just one more stinking time.
That was a really hard fight.
Yeah, yeah, that one took a while. I mean, I remember playing it thinking, am I doing something wrong? Do I have to do some sort of, you know, perfectly timed counter to take him out? No, it's just a really long fight. But yeah, I mean, they are nemeses in the truest, most violent sense. So,
yeah, it's true. Yeah. I think it feels like, you know, the answer you'd come up with is just Mother Brain, but that's not accurate. I think
not at all.
Ridley is much more the, you know, blocking Samus at every turn, and there's just no way to defeat him.
Yeah, and he just keeps popping up when you, like, really don't want him to. So.
Totally, the most inopportune time.
Yep. Absolutely. Just like you and me at work.
It's true.
Except you never killed my family, so it's kind of different.
Right. I just deleted your save file.
Speaking of great female characters and their rivals, another one of my picks would be Shantae and Risky Boots from the Shantae series. You know, it's kind of similar to the rivalry, the nemesis relationship between Mega Man and Dr. Wily, in that they are definitely enemies. But I believe Shantae actually sees good in Risky Boots, and she will help her out when need be. And they both just love getting the upper hand on each other. So maybe Shantae is just being naive, but, you know, she'll beat Risky, and Risky seems defeated, but then Risky will secretly turn the tables somehow, and then she'll get the upper hand, and so the struggle constantly continues. And again, there's, you know, some really great banter between the two, and, you know, throughout the games, it's been really fun to see how that relationship evolves. So they are a pretty cool pair of nemeses.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with that franchise, but that sounds like an interesting rivalry.
It is.
I kind of want to call you Risky Boots.
Only if you buy me dinner first.
Or is it Bisky Roots?
Definitely not that. Okay, so you got any more?
I did have Wii Fit versus just being fat. But that didn't seem really appropriate, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, again, that does seem somewhat one-sided, but yes, that is a rivalry for the ages that I guess we all must face.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. You can't deny that.
No, I can't. Okay, so my last pick, of course, you know, I got to go with Nintendo's main man. I got to go with Mario. And I think there are a lot of interesting choices you could say. You know, you could claim that Wario is his nemesis, you know, sort of being his opposite. But, you know, they don't really interact that much.
Mm-hmm.
You could also say it's Bowser, being that, you know, they are always fighting and they are apparently rivals for Princess Peach's affections, at least in Odyssey.
Sure.
But I'm saying that his true timeless rival is Donkey Kong. I'm going with Mario versus Donkey Kong.
Ah.
I mean, according to Miyamoto, Donkey Kong was at one time Mario's pet, in a sense. But then he ran off with Mario's girl, and then Mario stops him, and he turns the tables, and he cages up Donkey Kong, and then the next thing you know, Donkey Kong's offspring is making Mario into the bad guy and dropping Mario on his head, and, you know, then they're always, you know, competing in sports and races and all this stuff. And then you have the Mario versus Donkey Kong series, where they seem to be friends, but DK is causing more trouble.
Right.
And again, like, you know, taking over factories and stuff. And, you know, they got their start together. They're very evenly matched in a lot of ways. They're both heroic characters. And neither of their careers would be where they are today if they hadn't been trying to stop each other. So I sort of consider them like ultimate nemeses.
I'm impressed, Chris. That one's actually pretty good.
That's the most backhanded compliment you've ever given me.
It's only appropriate.
So I have to ask you, Pete, if we were to compare our nemesis rivalry to that of Mario and Donkey Kong, which one of us would be Mario and which one of us would be DK?
I mean, I've always thought like I was sort of your anti version, but maybe I have that backwards. Is it I'm the good guy and you're the bad guy?
Well, in Mario versus DK, they're both, sort of the good guys. So that's why I bring that up specifically.
That's true. But we never were fighting over a girl.
No, we weren't. At any rate, I think that possibly you could be Donkey Kong because of your luxuriant facial hair.
It doesn't just stop on the face, buddy. It's everywhere.
Plus there was that time you came into work wearing nothing but a tie. But we don't like to talk about that.
Yeah, the court won't let me talk about that one anymore.
Understandable.
Court order.
Okay, this does, I believe, bring this week's big topic to an end, as well as this week's episode of the podcast. However,
we
wrap things up entirely, we have time for one more thing. And of course, that would be a dramatic reading.
Nice.
Once again, this comes from the pages of Nintendo Power issue number 1. And back in this first issue, in the letters column, they had a bunch of what basically amounted to reader reviews of games. And so that's what I'm going to use for the dramatic reading this week. It'll be a reader review of the NES game Double Dribble. Double Dribble is super awesome. Just set the time per quarter, skill, level, and even team, and the game is at your fingertips. Every move is crucial. This game is hot. It's got everything as in real basketball. Free throws, block shots, switching defenses, rebounds, rim rock and slam dunks, and my favorite, three-point shots. If the three-pointer goes in, it makes a big blast, and the fans cheer in excitement. Shoot a desperation shot, and with the right touch, it will go in. The background cheer makes you hang from your seat. I would not trade this game for anything. It's my number one game. If this game was more realistic, you would be playing in the NBA. This game has improved my basketball skills, honest.
Yeah, right.
If you have the means, I recommend picking one up.
Can you say hyperbole much?
I would just love to know what this guy thinks of like modern basketball games.
Totally.
Like if he's playing like, NBA 2K18, like if he thought that playing Double Dribble was like as close you could get to being in the NBA, like holy crap, could you imagine what basketball games are going to be like 30 years in the future? Oh man, this guy's mind must be blown.
Was that signed like LeBron James and maybe now he actually is? Because the games just got better, he got better and the rest is history.
I didn't catch the name, but sure, let's pretend that's the case.
That's pretty good gold right there, man.
All right, well, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Until next time.
And the ghost causing strange racket in my closet, King Boo. We will see you next time.